And welcome to Inside Baseball with Old Chestnut. I'm Liam Allen with my friend Morris Sachs. How you doing, MB?
I'm doing great, bud. Great for a Sunday morning. How are you?
You were doing great on Friday afternoon. When I last I saw you, when I stopped by your house around 2 p.m., okay, I get over there and you're grinning ear to ear. And I, you know, it's, we haven't seen each other in a while. And I'm, oh, it's good to see
well,
you.
Well, it was part that. It was part that, obviously.
Part that, okay.
Nothing cheers me up than a Friday afternoon clusterfuck in the markets. I'll tell you, it's just the best.
Nothing makes me happier than seeing you happy. That's not true. Nothing makes me happier than you seeing like frustrated in a situation that you can get out of. That I like to see. Okay, but really, that makes me happy. But like to see you happy, that's a close second. Yeah. And man, you were beaming, and I was like 2 hours out of the loop. I was in a meeting, and I was like, oh, let me get over to Morris's. And I was like, what's going on? Oh, now I look.
You know, you want to have your up 13%, you know, year to date in April. Good on you, man. But how you feel now? Yeah, you're still up, but it doesn't feel quite as good, does it?
Right, people with their 5,700 price predictions on Thursday. Okay.
And even the gold,
Ooh, ooh.
you I think Friday was one of those instructive days in the market where all of a sudden people had to get back on sides. And I think that's quite telling. So you throw in the situation that happened overnight in the Middle East. I vetoed management's response that we go 24/7 coverage on the Middle East situation, but
There would have been nothing. It would have been 2 hours. See, they're flying the drones and missiles. Oh, they're all shot down. Okay, let's go to bed.
yeah, that game ain't over.
No, but
I
I don't understand how they're gonna talk about everything before we do it. Like, hey, we're gonna send the drones. Oh, okay. And now Israel says, hey, we're gonna hit you really hard now. Okay.
Had this brief discussion with Cheryl this morning. You know, she does a lot of diplomatic outreach with a number of these religious organizations, and she really believes in diplomacy. I, however, being a student of history, am not. My experience, and I'm ready for pushback from your listeners, but most wars end when the party A takes out party B's ability or willingness to fight. And wars don't end because people decide, hey, you know what, I was wrong and let's just make up. No, it's
Yeah, but it's the Middle East. All right, how about this? Here's the pushback. That's like wars, redcoats versus the colonies, okay? What allies versus axis. Dude, the Middle East, I feel like they'll just be like, okay, we're like war. War is not lining up troops. They're flying, you know, like they're gonna fly. It. My only pushback to that would be like it's a different era. The face of war has changed. It's more of a like media propaganda war than it is lining up troops. And the other thing about A and B quitting, that's never going to happen between either side. I don't how you can never
Yeah,
get
I
one say
agree.
mercy or be like, okay, truce, like us in Japan. How would you ever imagine that, okay, we're gonna drop atomic bombs on you, and then like a year later we're gonna be shaking hands on the carrier and we're gonna be friends forever.
Well, the Japan thing was an
Maybe.
example of overwhelming force, right? They built a couple of bombs, one to show we could do it. The second one to show we could do it as many times as we needed, and then they gave up, right? And the argument back then, and I choose not to take a side on this, was that it saved more lives because an invasion of Japan would have been horrific in terms of numbers. Now, I wasn't there, and as far as that logic holds, yeah, that makes sense. You know, when I can get away from the internet and my brain goes back to normal functioning, I get a chance to read from time to time. And in a book I read not that long ago, which I found quite instructive, talked about World War II, which is, you know, is one of my favorite subjects. And history has made fun of Neville Chamberlain for getting off the airplane, waving the piece of paper that he had signed, a non-aggression pact with Hitler, peace in our time. And then, of course, Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia and the game was on, right? And so the conventional wisdom was Neville was bamboozled by Hitler. This author, and I forget the name of the book, but you can find it, convincingly argued that Neville Chamberlain was very well aware of a few things. One was Britain's inability to fund a war. Two, its inability, even if it went to war, to maintain the empire. So it was going to be greatly reduced. And third, he had a sense of the public mood that after World War I, the public mood was not going to sustain another prolonged war on the continent. So, you know, he tried to reason with Hitler, and we all know how that worked out. But you know, that's why it's important to read history, because you know, news comes out and people are quick to judge, and then it takes a long time for the facts to come out. And so, you know, we have this thing in the Middle East. You know, the Hamas people, and let's be generous and separate the Hamas people from the religious Muslim people, because we're all people and yada yada yada, kumbaya. But their mission is to destroy Israel. And you know, look, love Jews or hate Jews, that's up to you. But if Canada said our mission is just to destroy the United States and was relentlessly lobbing cruise missiles into North Dakota, I don't think that will go on for very long. I mean, clearly your college students would blame the United States, and Harvard would plagiarize a bunch of stuff, including cancer research.
Canadians would blame Trudeau. And
Well,
I might agree with them.
I have some very personal ties, and they're not big Trudeau fans, although they do take the piss out of the fact that he's the son of Fidel Castro. Yeah, but we'll leave that for another day. I did get a rather nice email from one of our friends, Mr. Cash Bandicoot, down under. You know, and let me bring it up. It was a very interesting question, and I think its timeliness is good, because it's we saw this what happened on Friday. So just bear with me while I find it. We had dinner in the city last night, by the way. Sistina Italian restaurant.
Up to your standards?
I swear to God on this, the guy walks up, he goes through the menu, the specials. There's like 20 specials, and then he says, wait for it, he says, have the veal, it's the best in the city.
With a straight face?
If you don't know that reference,
Yeah.
you better get busy, because it's
Wow.
fucking awesome.
Wow.
Anyway, just give me one more. You know, I don't have my intern helping me with stuff today. Fuck, I can't find it. It'll come here. Just
Well, tell me about dinner. Just tell me about dinner then, okay?
so, 2 nights in a row,
City was safe. You didn't get mugged on the way to dinner. You took the
I
car.
didn't get mugged. I didn't hit anybody with a bike on a
Okay.
bike. You know, the whole thing was good. So they had burrata
Oh
on
yeah.
the menu. And you know, like that movie with Tom Cruise, you had me at burrata. So I've had that 2 nights in a row now. That, how can you not love
What does
that?
it come with? A little bit of oil, a little bit of salt and pepper. That's it. Just a big
Yeah,
ball of
yeah.
cheese. No red salt, nothing.
Just a couple of sliced heirloom tomatoes, a
Beautiful.
little EVOO, and a little, ready, wait for this. This was new for me. Coarsely cracked fresh pepper. I didn't realize you could go both ways. You
You
could
didn't
get.
cover that thing in salt. You didn't cover that thing with an ocean of salt. Come on.
No, it was.
You missed
Oh.
out on. You got to put like a that requires a pinch of salt. You're supposed to eat your tomato like you're supposed to dip it in the ocean, like it's supposed to seawater. You know, it really brings.
Really?
Yeah,
Okay.
sea
I'll
salt.
try harder next time. But you know, as you will get older and your children, I'm sure they're well behaved, but as they get better behaved in restaurants and they become adults and you have conversations, it's the ambergris of being a parent, where you're out and you have laughs, you tell jokes, you make fun of each other, you reminisce. And in our family, we're constantly quoting old movie lines, and we had a plus one at dinner, And he was he did a very nice job. He hung in there and
Because there's nothing better than when people are telling inside family
joke.
movie
Yeah,
lines. That's good. That's fun.
right. No, he's good kid, and you know, he's understands he's got some work to do
Don't
until
want,
he's
let's
getting
ne
up to
next subject.
speed.
We're not going to talk about this. Next subject. Okay, let's
Okay,
keep going.
so anyway, Cash Down Under. By the way, Cash, to this day, I never understand the Aussies' attraction to Marmite or Vegemite, as it's known. When I was introduced to them,
Polarizing. It's very polarizing, I think.
well, what I don't understand, maybe you could explain this to me, is whenever I complain about it, which is infrequent, the response is always, "Well, you like peanut butter." Well, I do, because peanut butter is good. All right. So, anyway, I think this was a very timely question. So, Cash wanted to know, given the size positions we would carry at Greenwich Capital, how would we prepare for a big day like Friday, where there was CPI? And I think that's a great question. And the reason being is, I think it highlights many of the things we've talked about over the years here, which is we would run positions for very long periods of time along the notion of themes, whether it was something was cheap or was something rich. And then we would go to great lengths to stress test them, see where the vulnerabilities were, and then prepare for you know, unusual, exogenous, extraneous events, right? And so typically what would happen on a big move, our main position might be decimated, because you know, if we were long a lot of 5 years and it was a bearish number and everyone decided to come in and beat the shit out of the 5 year, well, that's your biggest long, and that's going to suck. But we would have other trades on that would participate in that kind of event. Hence my disdain for short volatility trades, right? Because surprises create volatility. They don't create dull. Like when something comes out of the blue, like they hit the Twin Towers, market didn't sit still. Right, they're worried about a war in the Middle East. Market doesn't sit still, things move. So the idea is, you don't prepare for one day, you're constantly prepared. And for me, I did that in any number of ways. The poster child would be the walking up and down the row asking the traders, "Do you love your trades?" Because what happens, and why I love days like Friday so much, is it shakes out the weak hands. So if you're on the fence, if you don't love your trade, and they're crushing the fucking thing, what are you going to do? You're either be paralyzed, or you're going to get out at a shitty price. Either way, for somebody like me, that's going to present an opportunity. Is I've perseverated over the years. I don't mind being flat. I think the biography of Warren Buffett, while pulled back the curtain on what a nut job he is, had a number of salient points. One is he views, because he's still alive, he views having cash as having an option. And in this case, you have an option and you're getting 5% on the option that you're long, right? So that's sort of my takeaway with this thing. If you have a position and it's wrong, not only do you have to get from being wrong to being flat, which, when it's going the wrong way, if you're big is impossible. If you're small, you got X amount of shares, you hit market, send, Ken Griffin makes another $800 on you
Bingo.
and you're out. But when you're moving, an oil tanker, you don't have that luxury. You have to be set up for different circumstances. So that to me is why these simple things really are what has kept us, meaning me and people like me, alive over all these years, where you would see, I keep coming back to long-term capital. They were max risk on everything, figuring that the models worked and they were smarter and, obviously, history proved that wrong. I know in my case, I would claim, and this is, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a complete moron, but I think the fact that I wasn't that smart in a lot of ways worked to be an advantage, because, when I wanted to take the options class in college, and the professor said, "Well, have you taken Calculus X?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, you can't take the class." I'm like, "Oh, okay." I mean, at this point, I wasn't even out of college, and I was sitting in my, not dorm room, but my apartment, watching MTV and trading options on IBM, but he didn't think I could ever understand it. And so a couple of years later, we hired an option guy from Sally who had made like $100 million. So we had to hire him. And then he gets stopped out the first year and gets stopped out the second year, and then we let him go. But in the interim, I'm looking at these trades, and this is when long-dated options were just coming into play. Remember, I've been doing this so long,
Say that again. Just repeat that statement.
I've
Long.
been doing,
No. What were coming into play?
long-dated options. So more than 3 month or 6 month, 5 year option into a 5 year,
For all those 22
sort
year
of.
olds that listen out there, okay, that only know about 0 day to expiry, okay? He was there for the invention of fire, basically.
So, I was there when Black-Scholes, then the new thing was Cox, Ross, Rubenstein, Cox, Ross, Karashinsky,
Sure.
then
Let me ask you this, since you were going to go, I was there for. Dude, you were there for Arthur Burns. Can you talk about Arthur Burns?
I wait a minute. No, I
Come
was not there for Arthur Burns. That
on. Come on. You were
hurt.
not.
Ouch. Ouch. Volcker.
Where was Burns?
Volcker.
Wasn't Burns the early 70s?
Yeah, how old do you think I am?
I mean, like it's like an encyclopedia. So, like it's like or it's like that's that. What's the statement? The thing that you like to say? There's weeks where there's years where nothing
Yeah,
happens.
actually, that was Stalin, but there's years where nothing happens and weeks
Right.
where years happen.
I apply that to your life. I'm like, I just assume that it started in like 1950. Is
Yeah, with the invention of the wheel. Yeah, which Larry Day said, it's like a bagel.
I figured you're born in 50, 55, so you're 20 when Arthur Burns is
I
in.
was born in 1960,
So
thank
I was
you.
close.
August 6, 1960, 15 years later, after we dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima
Oh,
or
okay.
Hiroshima.
I just figured your familiarity with World War II led me to believe that you also might have been there. So.
I was on the beaches.
That's
I
what
mean,
I figured you were like you were gonna try to you would have been one of those kids that like lied about his age to join the Navy in 1945, okay?
I had this discussion with Dave, the driver, last night. Because his father was in the Marines and was in Okinawa, and just before they dropped the bomb on Japan. So Dave's father was prepared to die in the invasion of Japan. So, but no, I was born in 1960. But what I was telling Dave was, I think I mentioned to you, I tried to get in to the Naval Academy in West Point, and they wisely said no. And but there's an element of me that I really feel like I missed something, because my father was in the military, my uncle, two of my aunts, a
Yeah.
cousin, and I think that given the way my life worked, where my father died when I was 46, being in the military would have been bad because, things at home required. When a 19-year-old is an adult in the room, things are a little tough, but anyway, it worked out okay. But going back to the Cash Bandicoot thing, I would say the single biggest thing is just the repetitive viewing of positions and scenario analysis. And, where we had a very talented man who we could run a million scenarios in the click of one button, right? Now, you don't need to run a million scenarios because they're really, in the grand scheme of things, there ain't. But as I've mentioned, I would routinely kind of list the trades, bullish, bearish, neutral. But then I would also look at how does one trader's trade affect another? Are we all lined up on the same way? The famous quote, and one of the readers sent us this, in a crisis, all correlations go to one. So I was very much on top of it. And in the moment, you can ask my kids. I mean, I was very good about sitting down at the dinner table during the week, because at that point dinner was like 8 minutes, 12. How long is dinner at your house?
13 minutes tops, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, right? Yeah. But so, I was able to be in the moment. And I truly believe over time, when you look at this stuff long enough, you get into kind of not a meditative state, but a more creative state. And I'll give you an example. And everyone can feel free to make fun of me on this, because it may sound stupid, it may be stupid, but it may be creative. So I'm watching the movie Oppenheimer for like the second time. First of all, being a physicist must be great, because you get to do all this fun stuff and the chicks are like all over these guys, right? But that aside, he was drawing a diagram about wanting to have everybody in one place so you could have the guys who are good at this could work with the guys who are good at that, and yada yada yada, and you got a aggregate synergy. So I was starting to think about how we've laughed about the fact that they've gotten, 20 out of the last 14 payroll numbers wrong. Okay. Well, so when back in the 1800s, according to you, when I went to college, I studied accounting because the math was easy and I'm bad with math, right? But unfortunately, there were other college courses I had to take that pushed me into things that were hard. Expository writing, which I know you would have laughed at. I suffered badly. That was before spell check. That was before, yeah, it was just a fucking nightmare. So that was another C. But I did get pushed into economics. Now, I didn't like economics, but I knew that I had to pass it to graduate. And graduating was very high on my list of things to do because no degree, no job, no money, no honey, yada, yada, yada. Back then at the University of Illinois, the accountants had to take two classes in economics. Well, actually, it might have been three. Econ 101, which is the base, unlimited wants, limited resources, end of story, right? But the 300 level classes was Econ 300 was microeconomics, 301 macro.
All right.
So to distill it further for our pal, the forklift operator, the microeconomics deals with what they would say is the value of the firm. And I'll explain that in a second. 301 macroeconomics would be things like GDP, the economy as a whole. Okay. And in 300 micro, you would be introduced to things along the lines of marginal cost equals marginal revenue. Now, this is one of these statements you hear thrown around, and it can easily mean nothing to people. But when I had it distilled down, what it meant to me was, as a company, you are going to continue to produce products right up to the point that you are making no money on your last widget, meaning the cost of that last widget is equal to what you get for it. So below that, there's profit. So you want to produce till marginal cost equals marginal revenue. And so these were all quasi-mathematical constructs using graphs. Okay. So that was 300. 301, yet again, oddly enough, given the amount of time we talk about the economy, no fucking idea what was going on in that thing. There's still a concept to this day called ISLM that I learned in finance. I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now, but when youngest daughter, who has an economics degree, will sit me down for 8 minutes when she explains it to me, I understand it. After she gets up and walks away, it just vanishes. But it hasn't really hampered my career. But I'm winding a long, boring story here. But the point I want to make is nowhere in my formal education in economics, which included, econ, micro, macro, agricultural economics, commodity price forecasting. So I had a lot of economics, right? Not one class discussed behavioral economics, which is now all you hear about. Now, it's not that they didn't care about it. They didn't think about it. It wasn't part of the Chicago school, right? So when we're talking about me thinking about Heisenberg putting all these people together, I'm kind of wondering when you look at the economists that are around now, as you pointed out, they're a bit younger than me, indirectly. I'm okay with that, by the way. But I suspect they have a very classical training. And my question, and I don't expect you to necessarily be able to answer this to me, but I don't think any of the forecasting models take in this concept of behavioral economics. Maybe they do. I don't hang with a lot of economists. Based on the Heisenberg movie, I'm going to be hanging with physicists because it seems like they have more fun than economists. But when you just come through a once in a century experience of COVID, the previous one I would argue might be the flu pandemic around World War I, right? So you have all the
You were there, not me.
yeah, luckily I was immune to that.
Go ahead.
Anyway, what I wonder is, with all of these guys, and Lacey Hunt included, David Zervos included, Torsten Slok, good morning, hope you're well. Thanks for cribbing all our information. I wonder if the reason guys have gotten this economy so wrong is because they haven't introduced this cultural shock, this change in behavioral economics, because it's not how they were educated. And the late great Charlie Munger said something along the lines of, if economics isn't behavioral, I don't know what it is, right? So how do you model taking people and making them not leave their house for a year? How do you model, a gazillion-dollar increase in the Fed balance sheet? How do you model marginal propensity to consume? How do you model the crisis of all the people coming across the border? We're in a very, very dynamic time, meaning things are shifting. And so that's why, for me, I hope I communicated this last week. I mean, I feel like I got my risk down a great deal. And so Friday is just, low-hanging fruit for me. And I started putting stuff back on that I had gotten out of a while ago. And I'll take my temperature, what happens over the weekend. We had talked about this, and you were very, very generous in talking about how I had was onto the gold thing early, and I had reminded you that our job here was not to be right, it's to make money. I really want to reinforce that thing, because if you want to, again, cocktail party bullshit, if you want to, get on the podcast and talk about how smart you are and how I did this or how I did that, well, yeah, that's fine, right? But at the end of the day, I think as a trader, I really feel like I'm going down into the mine, and my job is just start digging till I hit coal, and then get the coal and bring it out, and I get paid on that. And I like to do it in an intellectual form. I guess I could day trade stuff back and forth and say I made money that way, but I, that isn't in my kill zone anymore. I don't have access to that information. I don't have economy of scale, those sorts of things. So, I
Not
like the,
your mission. It's not your mission. It's not important.
And so, these lessons that I try and explain to people. So again, if you're a long-term holder, right, and the SPOOs were down 75 points on Friday, that's a move. If you're in it for 20 or 30 years, I don't know that it matters. That red book I refer to all the time called Ibbotson, it's got the history of the stock market over the zillions of years. And basically, I'm paraphrasing. I don't know that I have this right, but if you can hold stocks for 10 years, okay, you're pretty much guaranteed to make something, right? The risk of having the money in the stock market is what I refer to as pin risk, meaning there's a day you need to take the money out. And if you're unlucky and your day was Friday, you that ate up a lot of earnings, right? But, again, assuming you have some understanding of how to manage a position, you don't have everything come due on the same day, right? You kind of, the people say ladder it. That is more of a calendar thing. Anyway, you see where I'm going with this, right? I just, again, Friday, I think the market action told us a lot. There, a lot of the sentiment indices indicated people were very bullish. Dr. Zervos was back on the, we're on, good for risk assets, that sort of thing. The 2-year note, which closed at a 490, I'm very fond of the 2-year note. We spent a lot of time together. But I think based on the inflation print and stuff, I think that needs to be north of 5%. I'm not going to go like 550 or anything like that, but I could easily see the thing at 5.25. And again, we get into this difficult situation of the yield curve still inverted. And, like everyone else, I've been fighting the notion of the inverted curve, right? Like it's wrong. It's telling me something's not right. Fortunately, I haven't been one of these guys fighting it, like I think the Druck and many hedge fund managers. I've been happy to be flat that thing. But maybe, I don't want to say this time it's different, but maybe we need a longer time horizon. And going back to the concept of we've had a change in behavioral economics. Maybe that's part of this. So to me, there's areas that I'm very comfortable swimming in. And being a long-only investor, that gives me a lot of latitude to be wrong because I don't have a margin clerk asking to cover my loss, right? So after being a 100-to-1 leverage guy my whole career, this being long things, it's kind of sweet. I like it. I like it. I still think, a 462 long bond feels a little rich. A 4.75 10-year note, that's not feeling that terrible all of a sudden. I mean, I wouldn't own it here, but if we get that thing back to 5%, 5.125, 5.25, inflation's 3%, all of a sudden, I could make a case for sticking my toe in the water on that kind of thing. I've ultimately concluded I have no understanding or ability to deal with the equity market in my life. And I'm long enough in the tooth, I've decided that that ship has sailed. I got enough going on that I'm okay with it. I had mentioned that we had talked about the Kimber pepper spray gun.
Can we talk
And
about Arthur Burns first? Can I talk about Arthur Burns?
sure.
You don't think Jay Powell thinks about him?
He does. Of course he does.
Don't you think he's trying to avoid that, and he has to avoid that? Like that,
Yeah.
look, we just spent 40 minutes talking history and how history's gonna look back on him.
Absolutely.
Like, isn't that all he, like, he doesn't need
Yeah.
money, he doesn't need power, he just can't have Jay Powell be in the same sentence
Yeah.
as Arthur Burns, right?
Yeah.
And if that's his, and if that's
Yeah.
his mission, and he wants to, and if he wants to stress the independence of the Fed, like, he's gone out of his way. I don't,
You're right.
I think that drives a lot of the decision making. He's got to put his name on it. So whatever those other little chirpy governors and the committee want to chirp, it doesn't matter. He has the final say, and he can
I'm
say,
with you. Lockstep, as you would say.
I think that plays a role. It has to play a role in this. Like he, they don't want. I would hope that all those Fed governors think that they're not going to let inflation get out of control again on their watch. But I don't know. I just thought,
You know, I, as I said, I'm lockstep with you. You know, especially as one gets older and you kind of look forward and look back, right? Well, if it were me, and part of the reason we do the podcast is I have things I'd like to share and kind of go out with people thinking I added some value, right? I mean, we get a lot of emails. A high percentage of them are flattering. Thank you. But Arthur Burns, his name will forever go down as, you know, letting inflation get out of control. Paul Volcker will forever go down as being the man who curbed the inflation problem for like 20, 30 years, right? Ben Bernanke, kind of a limp guy. You know, he did have a great quote, though. I think it was him. I think he said, "It works in practice, but does it work in theory?" I think that's very funny. But I do think Jay Powell, being a wealthy guy, right? He made a lot of money in private equity. And yeah, he wants to be the guy that managed the COVID crisis. And, you know, they were taking shit for not doing stuff quick enough. Then they were taking shit for not doing stuff fast enough and too fast. Yep, up, 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 up. Well, we're not at 3%. We're close, but their target is below 3, right? And we're not there yet. Now, maybe we'll never get there. Okay. That won't destroy his legacy if we don't get there. But what would destroy it would be if it stopped going down and started going back up. And so, as you presciently said a couple weeks ago, what if the next move is a hike? I'm not going to predict which way the Fed's going to move because it's all now down to the data. And you will recall a couple of weeks back, after one of the Fed meetings, I said, you know, I'm a little disappointed because that means we're going to be getting swung around based on the data. Well, that's where we're at. And it's going to stay that way. And if you get very constructive inflation news, then they'll start pricing in eases. And if inflation doesn't go in the right direction, the market will push out the eases. And if inflation starts to go the wrong way, they're going to tighten. And I'll leave it to you to figure out which way inflation's going. I have no dog in that hunt because to me, again, I'm more interested in making money, which just comes down to looking at how securities are priced. As I, you know, I don't, that's my shtick. I don't get any psychic income. I get a little psychic income from being right, maybe a lot. But, you know, I'm still old school where, you know, let's see what the P&L says. And so, you know, again, I don't think in some ways a whole lot's really changed other than the prices. The uncertainty, if anything, has gone up, right? Now we have the Middle East thing. You know, somebody told me if Israel decided to take out the Iranian oil complex, that's the end of Iran. Now, I don't see that for a number of reasons, mostly because of the blowback of what it would do to the environment. I'm not pro or con green earth,
Yeah.
but I do remember what Saddam Hussein did to Kuwait, and that was a fucking mess.
Yeah.
Maybe if Israel can shut down their industry through, spyware, hacking, stuff like that, then, but if they do, you're going to get oil prices are going to go up again. And crude oil closed at $85.66.
Switching to summer gas too this week, so the whole East Coast is going up another 50 cents this week. So you could,
50 cents.
yeah, we switched to summer fuel. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's going to show up. I know in my little real estate empire, the rents have gone absolutely through the roof. Now, before anyone thinks I'm screwing our tenants or making tons of money, we've calculated what COVID cost us, and it was substantially more than I had expected. Part of the problem is the rents dropped during COVID, and New York cuts all sorts of deals when you build housing. So we got a tax abatement when we built the housing. So if you build a certain percent affordable, yada, yada, yada. But one of the little hidden things in the Faber Constitution is in those buildings, you can only raise the rate by so many percent per year. So we had apartments that were renting out at, $70 a square foot. And when COVID hit, they ended up getting rented out at 30.
Yep.
The market is now 100. But we can't move them all to 100 because we're limited to. Okay. Speaking of real estate, and forgive me for doing this, but I was so enamored with our success selling out the Kimber pepper spray.
Yeah.
Old Chestnut is building an office tower in Manhattan. It's in the corner of Bowery and Bond Street.
Bowery and Bond. All right, let me get the map out. Go ahead.
So
What's the address? What's the
if
address?
you're looking for Class A
350 Bowery.
pristine, sorry,
350 Bowery.
360.
60. All right, 360. Write it down, folks. Not 350. 360.
Yeah. So 360bowery.nyc. If you're looking for Class A, never been moved in office space, please. That would be helpful. Our brokers tell us that there's huge demand for pristine Class A office space, even though everyone's working from home and New York's falling apart. But,
Dude, that's a nice neighborhood down there. That's where the action is. That's where you want to be.
of course.
Huh.
Location, location, location.
I mean, what is that technically Union Square? Is that
No,
the
it's a
Bowery?
little bit east
East Village.
of, it's East Village,
Okay.
it's east of NYU,
Yeah.
and there's some great restaurants down there.
You're on Bleecker. You're like, you got it's NoHo, dude. That is NoHo. Okay. Yeah. So that's NoHo. Yeah. You're right there on Bleecker. You got Washington Square. You got it all going on. Oh, dude, you got Katz's nearby. I mean, what's the.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. I don't know why we're not full already.
Yeah. All right. Well, did you have the party that I said? Do you have an event? Is there
Oh
an event?
yeah. No.
Okay.
No. We're very low key.
I have a friend. I got a friend that owns a hotel down there, and the word I had a friend stay at the hotel, and they said that the lobby, the space, is used by professionals during the day. Like the lobby was
Yeah,
bumping.
packed. Yeah. That's kind of the new thing where the rooms tend to be a little smaller, but the common spaces are bigger and they have Wi-Fi and tables. And you know, it's a cool vibe.
Totally.
And yeah, I forget the name. There's a hotel over near NYU Law School that
No way.
it's kind of like, maybe it's like the Jane Street Hotel. Could it
Okay.
be?
All right. Yeah.
It's like you're talking about. It's this really cool area with couches,
Yeah.
and they charge enough for the food and beverage that it keeps the riffraff out. And
Interesting. Yeah.
yeah, so that's really a cool area. I'm kind of excited about it. You know, I just, it's one of these things. Nothing's done till it's done. And but you know, that's my thing, that is I've turned my attention to that, seeing as the gold call was, you know, just to tell you, I had, if you thought the gold call was bad, the way I managed the oil position years ago was horrific. I was back working with EG at 515, and a guy I was doing business with one of the investment banks comes up to visit. We sit down and we start talking about all the domestic energy stuff. And I talk myself into a frenzy. It's like, wow, we've got all this domestic energy. It's fantastic. You completely remove the geopolitical risk. If need be, we can survive. The United States can survive without dealing with anybody. And so over the next 2 or 3 years, I start loading up on this stuff. And as is my wont, you know, my eyes tend to be a little bigger than my stomach. And then when oil went negative, yeah, I basically puked everything out at the low, only to watch it play out exactly as I had anticipated. So again, you know, I can't even talk about it to my wife. She just rolls her eyes, and it's, you know, her attitude, and I mean this so fondly, it's just simply, fuck you, pay me.
Dude, I can remember sitting at your kitchen table 10 years ago and something came up about like energy and like you looked at Ed and you were like that fucking energy and I was like what are these guys talking about? That's what you were talking about then. You had some like cryptic said about like oh that fucking
Well, that's where I learned Carl Icahn, while way wealthier than me, is a stupid fucking cunt. Because when oil went below zero, he started bragging how he called all his guys to start buying oil and filling up the tanks and this and that. I'm like, you don't understand a thing about either commodities
Yeah.
or management. Number one, if you have to call your guys, if you have to call your peeps, they gotta bring you in
Yeah.
and tell you, hey, when oil's negative, you should buy something. Well, then you got the wrong people. That's number one. Number two, you gotta understand, the reason oil was negative was there was nowhere to put it. So, old man, go back to taking over Pan America Airlines or whatever the fuck you did, and go fight with Billy Ackman.
Exactly. Those two can continue their feud. All right, pal. We've done it. All right. So 360 Bowery. We're gonna try to move. We're gonna try to get some life. We're
Yeah,
gonna pull some.
in fact, if you say you heard it on IBWalk, we'll throw in 1 month free rent.
There you go.
How
So
about that?
I'm just gonna forward all these emails directly to you. There's an inside baseball cast. Okay, you can in case you know for the in case the folks at 360 Bowery are on top of the ball here.
4 years, and I finally turned out to be a whore, just like every other blogger, podcaster.
Beautiful thing. Dude, maybe we should have a party down there. We just have an inside baseball party. Think about how many people we would get in downtown Manhattan. You said we're gonna have a party in the East Village this summer.
How about this? Let's broadcast live.
Dude, now you're talking.
There's a penthouse on this building.
I know, I
That's
know.
what we're gonna do. We're gonna have a party, and we're gonna
Yes.
podcast live.
For your
That's what we're
birthday. We'll do it in August for your birthday, okay?
gonna
All right,
do.
very
By the way, just before, I know you're eager to go.
Oh.
I think I may be in Canada next weekend.
Good. I can't do the show anyway. No show next weekend, folks. So sold. You're no, we're not doing the show. You're going to Canada. So what's today's date? We'll see you the following weekend. Whatever, whatever that is. Yeah, no show on the 20-21st. We'll be back the 27th, 28th, maybe.
Well, you're coming because we had that meet and greet in Lumsden, and then
Told you to
Yellowknife.
give you a hard time at the border last time. Okay.
Well, you won't be bringing any children with you.
Okay, got it. Okay.
It's great to see you, bud.
All
You
right,
take care.
buddy. Thank you. I'll see you soon. All right.